The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.
It is so weird because it is not... It's not raining, but it wants to rain.
Yeah.
And it's just weird.
It's just cold.
It's ugly. Especially for November, man. This is unnecessary weather for November. Nobody needs this weather. And it's humid. Yeah, no, it's weird, man. It's so weird. It's disgusting. How do you feel about the coffee? It's a new guy. It's Bootleggers.
Yeah, Bootleggers. Bootleggers, the coffee's not bad. The food's fairly random.
Mm.
Yeah.
It was a bit weird when I asked for the little stoppers on the top and they said, we don't have those, but what we do have is, I suppose it's a little bonnet.
It's a little bonnet.
It's just on the coffee cup. And I mean, I get the bonnet idea, but with the bonnet, I lose all the foam. Like, what if I like the foam? You know? I don't know how that works. I don't know how. Bootleggers do make decent coffee. We're still on the hunt, though, of course. We're still on the hunt. If you have any recommendations for snacks and things we should have and try out, we'd give it a shot. It's one of those shows, though, eh? It really is one of those shows. One of those shows where we have too much content and too little time. We're going to get into everything from a tariff dividend to how to get into investing and try and find 300 billion rand that the Road Accident Fund seems to have misplaced. So, full show. Simon's confused. We're about to get into it. Let's get the show on the road. Let's kick things off. Let's get the show on the road.
Unsettled to 98, our currency collapsing.
Privilege of welcoming one of our good friends into studio.
So not even Buffett listens to Buffett.
Sue me, China, if you must.
1 or 22 on AC, but you're not getting that at home.
And there's quite a bit to discuss.
The stock is cheap.
The last podcast I did.
Introduce me.
I'm Jimmy Munaha.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Let's kick off with useful insights. As always, this is... probably the easiest conversation that we have. No, it's not. We have no time. We have way too much information to get into. And this week seems like we have even more information. So we're going to start the clock. We're going to get straight into useful updates. 3, 2, 1, go. First useful update. Elon Musk's payday.
$2 trillion.
$1 trillion.
Yeah, but let's be clear what he's got to do. He's got to get Tesla to $8.5 trillion valuation. He's got to sell 1 million Optimus robots. He hasn't sold one. He's got to get 1 million self-driving taxi, robo-taxis on the road. He's got like 12. He's got to sell 1 million Teslas and get 2 million Teslas and half of them on full self-driving. Nah.
Not going to happen. Might take him a couple of years.
Well, he's got some years. He's got some time for it. It's just, I mean, nah, I mean, he will get bits of the way there, but he's not going to...
So my theory on that is exactly how you're reacting is how the board reacted, to say, it's unlikely, he won't get there, give it to him. It's all fun and games until he gets to those numbers.
To be clear, if he gets there, give him the $1 trillion. I have no problem with that. I then would turn around and say, you know what, I do also think that when you're a billionaire, anything you over the first billion, you should pay 75% tax on, because they could fund Snap. But hey, that's a different story for another day.
Okay. The other $1 million conversation, the SAFT $1 million pitch, South African Future Trust Summit. It is a summit that was set up by the South African Futures Trust, which was set up by the Oppenheimer family. Mm-hmm. They set it up around the COVID pandemic. So it happened last week. And they basically are looking to support small businesses and showcase and spotlight small businesses to investors and the like. They had a $1 million pitch this year, which means the winning business was funded $1 million. Imagine that for a South African small business.
Not so small.
Million,
$1 million, 17 and a half million.
Yeah. For a small business. That's a
nice
lot.
That's a nice runway.
That's a very nice runway. And that's all we're going to say on that update.
Okay.
The chip war continues. The US and China. So the United States says no Blackwell AI chips from NVIDIA to China. China responds and says, no outsourced chips that are not bought from local manufacturers for local production. If you've got a project that is less than 30% of the way complete, you will have to adjust and buy chips local. So one is saying buy local. The other one is saying we're not sending our chips. This is just the trade war in a different form.
It is. And it's interesting. So NVIDIA just has such a lead on it. I mean, we've got chips coming from both. Amazon's got their own chips and Microsoft, Alphabet. Everyone's trying to make their own chips and all well and good. But the thing with NVIDIA is firstly, they've got their CUDA software, which wraps it up around it, and that gives them a bit of a moat, but also their ability to iterate with speed. Mm. And that's not what we're seeing from the other folks. It just simply doesn't happen. The Alphabet TensorFlow, the AWS Trainium, they just can't iterate. And NVIDIA's iterations is twofold. One is processing speed increasing and then power usage decreasing. And it's going to put China in the back foot. China's got some nice chips, but they haven't got Blackwells.
Okay.
Not even close.
One more update, then we're going to take a halftime break. Blacklisting corruption in South Africa. It's bizarre, right? It's not a thing we seem to do. The Minister of Public Works, Dean McPherson, has come out to say that companies that have been found to have been on the wrong side of corruption would now be blacklisted from participating in contracts with the state. Now, I understand that. It's all novel. It's all cute. But I can just set up a new company. Why not blacklist the director themselves?
Ah, I mean, yes. And why aren't we doing this already? You mean I can get accused of corruption and walk out and walk back in and say, hey, it's me. And they're like, cool, no worries.
Well, that's the thing. We don't really have an idea of what's happening. Look, it's a great reform to think about in principle.
But hit the directives.
That's it. Hit the directives. We're going to take a halftime break. We will be back shortly after this. We're just going to do a bit of a snack break because we like those. And we're back. Next update, straight into it. M&S profit slump. Marks and Spencer's saw a 99% profit decline. 99%.
Hang on, what happened? That's not they didn't sell enough prepaid meals.
No. They sold some stuff. I mean, the business had a couple of challenges from an operational standpoint, but a 99% profit slump.
£3.4 million.
Yes.
That's all the money they made in 6 months.
That's all the money gone.
Cyber attacks,
yeah.
Oh,
you'd never think that this would have such an impact. But I mean, I suppose this is what it is. Business confidence, right? Is now we're not sure.
But also, a cyber attack shuts you down.
Yes.
That has serious implications.
It does.
I mean, so even if just for a couple of days.
Yeah, your POS, your point of sale systems go down.
Everything
you can't process
dies.
Payments, you can't do anything.
So you basically shut down for a couple of days. And these guys operate on operating margins of, 1.5-2%.
Mm.
You shut down for a week. It takes you 50 weeks to work it back.
Nice. You see, and that's probably why the digital age is a bit weird. Anyway, next update, Cell-C.
Yeah.
So we spoke about the Cell-C numbers that looked a bit weird. Cell-C's listing.
Apparently.
Mm.
I can't work out. Look, love me another list. Mm.
We love those.
Yeah,
we love
listings.
Optasia recently.
We got the Coke people, Coca-Cola folks coming. We've got lots of listings. Lovely. Cell-C, I mean, I need to see. I'm not a fan of telcos generally, although this year telcos have been really great. So let's not diss them. Telkom just came out with an insane trading update, 100% increase in EPS.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what valuations are. And to be clear, this is not an IPO. This is an exit by the Levy brothers.
Effectively, right?
Yes.
And this is the other thing that has me wondering about that is if it'll gain the traction that they believe it will. I mean, if you've just had such a serious concern around your balance sheet, valuations come into question immediately.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. We'll see how that goes.
And
we'll
also, I'm not convinced our market's big enough for 4 telcos, but we haven't got
we've had that conversation before.
Yes.
It is in a previous episode. Sai articulates his reasons why he doesn't believe we need more telcos in this space. Go check that out because we're going to wrap up our updates. We're going to look at Singapore dealing with scammers. So Singapore has decided that if you are found to have been a scammer, they are going to bring back effectively what would have been the equivalent of corporal punishment in schools, and they're going to beat you.
Jeez.
They are going to beat you. Yes. I don't disagree with it.
No, it's
you're scamming
punishment.
You're scamming people.
But what happened?
You're taking money from old people, Simon.
What happened to good old-fashioned jail?
It seems to not work. Maybe we must beat you in jail.
They probably,
2-for-1 special.
They're probably scamming from jail.
You see.
Okay.
Never know.
Yo.
Weird update, right?
Singapore do not mess around.
Singapore do not play
around. If you chew gum, they find you.
They have. It is illegal. So I did a series. I've been doing a series throughout the year on the radio side of it. Every day I've been trying to find a weird law from around the world.
Mm.
And Singapore actually has a law that says it is illegal to chew gum, sell gum, purchase gum in Singapore. So that's yes, 100% accurate there.
Okay.
Not part of our useful updates, but hey, who knows? Last useful update, we don't have time for it. It is midterm budget policy statement. That is happening on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's a boring thing. Will you announce the new inflation target? Probably not, because that's more a budget thing for February.
Mm.
Yeah. He's going to get a little bit more money. Thank you, precious metals.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Okay, so we have 15 seconds. I'm going to tease something that's going to probably make it into our Make It Make Sense, and that is a $2,000 dividend tariff or tariff dividend for U.S. citizens. President Trump seems to think he can pay all Americans at least $2,000. We're going to get that later in the show. Boom! Out on time. We're getting into our deep dive. We are diving into some basics around investing. And again, folks, this not financial advice. Please don't take it as financial advice. We're sharing our thoughts, our opinions, our experiences. And hopefully we can give you a beginner's guide or a not so beginner's guide to how to get into your investment decisions. We're joined in studio by a very special guest, a good friend of ours. We did say to you that we have a wide network of people that we're able to bring into these shows to lend their expertise. We have a good friend of ours, Ivan Sambo, joining us in studio to take a look at his journey and perhaps what we can learn from that. Ivan, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for taking the time to come all the way to join us in studio.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's also an honor to be here. Two of you, two giants of the field. So I feel like, yeah, I'm punching behind, but below what I can.
No. I think that's the power of our community is we're all able to lend whatever it is that we can share. And this is the thing. So Simon and I have something that we don't know that we're hoping you can help us with. Please explain to us what happens with utensils on TikTok, because we don't know what goes on there.
Listen, I don't know how it happened. I had a ruler.
Okay.
Lost it.
I remember with your ruler.
Yeah, I had a ruler. I don't know where my ruler. I don't. Maybe the latest helpers in the house misplaced or something. Then I was trying to point and I couldn't point until I asked my wife. She gave me a spoon.
Okay.
And people like, oh, you changed your spoon. And I was like, oh, let me play with people's mind. Listen, like they are interested. So every day, every week, I change to a new one. And
okay.
People just enjoy that. I don't know why people are enjoying that. They're even fighting to guess what the next item will use the next video.
Ah.
So I'm like, oh, people are interested into this. I was like, okay, let me just keep
using it. Okay, because last time I saw you had like an egg flipper.
I don't know, but people love it. And people are interested and are invested into it. Like they actually fight. You'll see next week which one I'm using.
Okay. So we're also going to get in on that. We're going to find stuff to do. But for this deep dive, we're going to get into just experiences, because I think sometimes the value of experiences can be understated. And I've often learned from the experiences of others when it comes to some decisions that have been made. And I guess I want to start the conversation perhaps with, for those that don't know who Ivan Sambo is, give us a bit of background around your journey and how you found yourself in the investing space. Because for many people that don't know you, that don't know that you have an actual day job, you're an employed individual, they think, oh, we see this person on social media, they're just an investment person and all of that. Tell people how you got into it and what your journey was like.
I never hide this. By profession, by education, I have zero experience in finance and investments. I have a law degree, master's in law, focusing on governance.
Okay.
I work in the field of governance. But how I got into the space of investments and saving was that I was raised by my grandmother who was also working for government, but she was working in the finance and human settlement side.
Oh.
And because of that, she was exposed to a lot of bond systems, financial investment system, and she was not much educated, but she would bring those things back home and give it to me. And I thought, just read this, help me with this. And I started reading more and more and more about the investment space where she was working there, and she would bring all these pamphlets, these books, this report. And I think both my mind just loved reading at that time. I got hooked into it. So when she retired, you know, when they retire, you get a huge lump sum.
She gave
me a huge amount of money. I was like, hey, my current son, I'm giving you money. But it was just me and her growing up, right? Spent almost 20 years together. So she's like, hey, here's money. Go do whatever you want. Didn't know what to do with a huge amount of money. It was like 5,000, right? She gave me. Imagine in 17, giving an 18-year-old 5,000, right? I didn't know what to do. I bought myself a laptop and I had change. I bought myself a liquor, I still had change. I was like, actually, let me go buy a retail savings bond at the post office. That time I was still available in the post office.
Yeah,
when we still had a post office.
Yeah, yeah,
Yeah, I was still at a post office. So I went there, invested it for, I think it was 1,000 rand I had to South African Reserve Bank, South African Retail Savings Bond, and I started tweeting about it, this journey, because I'm a teenager, we all love tweeting, and people on Twitter were so invested in this journey. Mm. Here's a teenager buying a retail savings bond, and people were like, okay, I'll be following this journey, and keep on like sharing information, how I was able to go buy it and all of that. And while doing that, I got introduced into Easy Equity in the same time. I was like, oh, let me try Easy Equity out. Reading more about Easy Equity shares, the JSE, fell in love with the JSE. And I started buying more shares. That time, my first year in university, doing a law degree, fell in love with the JSE, love the JSE. Now I started buying a lot of small companies, JSE, because I'm like, I'm believing this is the next Capitec Bank. you know, everyone goes to JSE with the mindset they want to get the next Capitec Bank.
Yeah.
Mm. So I started doing that, started reading more about it, and I noticed something on Twitter. It was a lot of misinformation about the JSE. A lot of people were tweeting about the JSE. I know some of them were like me, just general everyday people, thinking they understand the JSE. That was like, but this is incorrect. Mm. I started meeting that guy to screenshot all the reports, tweeting them out, sort of share, okay, you are wrong here. Like, I was that guy that was basically a teacher for the JSE, correcting all the information. And just like that, I started getting deep into it and to explore the JSE, explore the New York Stock Market, went to Australia, hated Australia, came back to the JSE. I'm now just known as that. And that's the thing. I'm just informed about the investments because of practice and reading, and not being someone who's just like, okay, I'm qualified in that. That's what I always tell people. I'm not a qualified person here. Just a passion and a love for the industry, basically.
No rocket science required.
No rocket. And maybe, apparently in this day and age, no post office required. Folks, there is a conversation about the post office happening later in the show in our Make It Make Sense. So stick around for that, because that's going to be a good one. Si, I want to get your thoughts on what Ivan's saying about the JSE and about being on the socials, because those that know anything about Simon Brown know Just One Lap, know the JSE Power Hour. I've done a Power Hour as well. But take, perhaps from your perspective, the importance of being able to consistently put out reliable information, because even before you and I built this platform, you'd been doing that, and that's how you and I met. But we also, as Ivan rightly mentioned, we live in a day and age where information isn't always accurate. And so some of the voices out there are relied upon for their accuracy.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, it's not that you need to know everything. No one knows everything. Mm. It's that you need to put stuff out there. You need to not be opinionated. And I like a lot of what Ivan does is like, yo, this is what I did. Mm. You know, you went and spent $1,000 into the retail bonds. You weren't saying, hey, you go do this. It's that, you know, sort of lead by example more than anything else. And be quite prepared to say, you know what, sometimes I don't know stuff. And to appreciate that just because we might know it, and we might have known it for, you know, 10 years, 20 years since we were kids, that doesn't mean other people know it. We must remember that we were once like everyone else too, where we knew absolutely nothing and we are learning. And it is that very much, it's a journey for everyone. And I know it sounds like a cliche. I always say to folks, you know, I talk at the JSC Schools Challenge every year at their prize giving in October. And I always say to folks that they have knowledge, and we talk about knowledge being power, and it is, but the power of the knowledge is in the sharing, not in the holding of. And to share that and to talk to folks, etc., and be prepared to engage people. And the key thing is to not make the wild promises about getting rich, not to try and scam the folks, etc. And look, and at points, you know, I've made mistakes, and then you go and correct them, and you know that's fine. No one begrudges that sometimes. But it's just like understanding this isn't rocket science. Mm. But if someone hasn't heard it and been taught it, well, they don't know nothing.
Mm. We're going to get into mistakes, because I think that is how a lot of us have been able to learn over the years. Before we do that, we're going to take a small snack break. Are you a Cinnabon fan?
I don't like sweet things.
You like sweet things?
I don't like
sweet things. You don't like sweet things?
I love sweet things on meat.
Uh-huh. And like sweet sauces, like sweet barbecue sauces and things.
If it's fair. Sweet fair. On meat?
Do you not just like meat? In general. And we're back from the snack break. We're continuing the show. We're carrying on with our conversation. We are, of course, joined in studio by a good friend of ours who's also a full-time employee and still finds time to put out good financial content, Ivan Sambo. He's joined us in studio to chat about his investment journey and perhaps what we can learn from these sorts of conversations. Gentlemen, before we took our snack break, Si, you touched on mistakes. And I want to start the conversation from that perspective. I want to come to you, Ivan, because the mistakes you've made versus the ones I've made versus the ones Simon's made based on our years of experience and all other factors all look very different. Yeah. But do you remember back when you bought your first car or your first big financial decision? Do you remember any mistakes from that that you learned?
It was actually a car.
Was it a car? That was a wild guess, but okay.
I remember when I started working, I was an assistant lecturer at the University of the Western Cape. So I say, I'm making money now. From being a student and doing masters now to like getting a job, and you're seeing like from getting this far to now getting a paycheck.
That's a huge job.
Then I'm like, okay, I need a vehicle. I need a car. Went to website, found a car, went to meet with the car salesman and made an application for car finance. Got one back. The first one I got, the guy gave it to me and I said yes. I said yes. I didn't read that document. I said yes.
And you just saw the car.
I saw the car. I'm approved. Here, I can pay every month. I said yes. But thank God, I think 3 or 2 months in, I don't know how, I don't know if I'm allowed to mention that bank, but that bank was allowed me to renegotiate my finance, car finance. I don't know if that was, I didn't even know what was possible to do, but I was able to, because it didn't make sense the money I was paying. It didn't make sense the interest I got for someone like me. It was a huge mistake. I think it's both of excitement. And that's the thing as well, I'm still dealing with to this day. When it comes to financial mistakes, a lot of them for me, driven by excitement. If I can access something.
Actually, that's a good point. Yeah.
Like, even like a lot of the mistakes I think about, driven by excitement. And I just want to, I can have access to this thing now. I'm going for it.
Sai, I mean, we agree from an excitement perspective, but what is the one thing you remember that you think back on and you're like, wow, firstly, I wish I hadn't made the mistake, but maybe in hindsight, I'm glad I made that mistake.
I'm not glad of any of my mistakes. No, so for me, it was chasing stocks. I remember in the late 90s, even into the early 2000s. And, you know, there would be some stock that would be, you know, running hard, and most of them, I mean, almost to a stock, they no longer exist. I mean, eData and MoldMed and all these other ones out there, Brainware, etc. And to me, it was always, I would watch and watch and watch and watch, and then I would be like the Oak, when I jumped in, I'd also ring a bell and say, here, I'll be the top. And it was, I was really bad at excitement, because I would watch from the side, as all excited, and then go far, far too late, and everyone else was bailing out. But it was, I loved the thrill of it. I had no plan, I had no strategy, I had no idea what I was doing. I just knew that this was huge fun and that I would make money. I didn't make much money effect at all. In fact, I was losing money, I imagine. But it was huge fun, and that was the key point of it, I suspect. It was just too much fun, perhaps.
Speaking of making money in the markets, what would you say, and perhaps let's start with you, Sai, is the biggest myth that South African investors, or investors in general, are falling for as novice investors, or maybe as investors, as you said, that might not have the same level of access to information as some of the others?
So I think, I mean, the one myth that a lot of people point to is that you know, that people think you can get rich quickly in the JSE. Yeah. And I think people have moved on from that. The folks who are trying to get rich quickly are doing weird crypto stuff on Facebook and betting stuff and nonsense like that. I think that the JSE's sort of shaken that off to a degree. I think the myth is, and there are a couple of them, and the big myths are things like you need lots of money, you need to be super smart, you need to be super connected. Those all used to be true back in, well, not the super smart part. Those used to be true back in the day. That's no longer applicable. You really can pitch up with like $50 or $100 and start investing. Now, you know, to turn your $100 into $1 million is going to take a bit of time. But I mean, you've got to start somewhere, right? I mean, you know, I met someone a while ago. He's like, no, he's waiting for his first 100,000, then he'll start. I'm like, dude, why are you waiting for 100,000? Like, jump in now. He's like, no, he's done the math. He needs 100. It's like, that was true once upon a time. It's not true anymore. You really can just, you know, he had whatever he had. You know, jump in. Like, he would have been up like 30% this year already.
Do you think, Ivan, that perhaps some of it is, when I look at 30% of 100 Rand, I see it as 30 Rand, but 30% of 100,000 Rand is 30,000. And so I want the bigger returns, but I don't understand that I can get to that point eventually.
Actually, that's true. A lot of people look at that point of view, but they forget the starting small, that's how it works. I remember when I was a student that time, the first time I bought shares, when I was a student, I was getting Nasfas. I was investing with my Nasfas, putting in 300 Rand. I was putting in 200 Rand, 50 Rand, 100 Rand. And I think it allowed me to build the knowledge. And I think people forget that when you start small, sometimes you look at it like, it's a small amount of money. So you have the opportunity to take higher risk and learn more about the space you are in, the market you are in. But that's how I was able to do it. While putting 50 Rand in buying shares of ShopRite, whatever company it is, I started learning about how the stock market works. I started learning about how does this company perform. So when I started working, I'm putting in now 3,000, whatever amount of money I'm putting in now, I already have the knowledge when I started to save small amount of money. So now when I moved the huge amount of money. I don't make the same mistake I did with a small amount of money. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm crying because now I'm not losing money. I learned from losing money, like losing just 20 rand, at 50 rand. Now with a bigger amount, I'm not making the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the two things that a lot of people tend to forget. I think just to add on what Simon was talking about, another myth that people don't want to acknowledge that you need to leave the JSE. People think of the JSE, which are those who now love it and invest so much into it, don't want to leave. They make it their personality.
Mm.
I know people a few days ago were so shocked when I revealed that I sold my entire portfolio.
Mm.
They were like, why? You're so young. Why are you selling? I was like, I had a goal. 5 years ago, I set a goal for myself and I had to readjust it 3 years back because I was planning to get married this year.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, it was the time for me to get married, to pay for all the wedding expenses. Mm. And I said, this 5-year investment I've made is for me to do this.
Mm.
And I sold it to go achieve my life goal. And I'm going to go back and reinvest again and continue. Because I still have my retirement. I knew it's my pension fund.
I'm going to go back
and build that portfolio because I set a goal for this 5 years of investments and now I have achieved it. And I have time for me to exit, go use that money according to the goal I had. And people don't think, I'm in the JSE. I know how it works. I'm there for the long term. What is the long term?
So it's interesting that you mention the marriage thing because, and perhaps this will be another deep dive. Perhaps we'll have you back on the show to go through this journey because in life, we all have these decisions, right? Whether your decision is, I want to go on holiday, whether your decision is, I need to propose, whether your decision is, I need to finance a wedding. All of these decisions require a level of planning and a level of financial commitment to be able to get through and to be able to see the other side of it. And I suppose you get to sit back now and say, I managed to pay for all of my expenses without debt. You get to sit back and that's important.
And 100%. And it's about having a plan.
Yeah.
And what your plan is irrelevant. It's going to be different for
everyone. Because it's your plan.
I've been married forever and a day, so that's not part of my plan. I have other plans. But it's about having a plan. And that is, I think, with far too many people. And I appreciate particularly, when you were starting, maybe when I was starting, when we're starting, the plan is, let's get rich.
Mm. Yeah.
Sure. Mm. And then slowly the plans evolve and you have them. And then that's the whole point. You got yourself a plan, kind of stick to it. And that's that process of it. And the key thing is that to appreciate, and again, it takes time. 5 years. It was a 5-year plan. It's that sort of thing. Have the plan. Know how it's going to play out. Know it's going to take some time. Know that there are going to be some bumps and market crashes along the way. But have a plan. Otherwise, what's the cliche? If you don't plan, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
Yes, that's exactly the phrase. Ivan, I want to just come back to your proposal for a bit and kind of look at like the wedding expenses and all of those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I imagine when you went into that, it would have felt overwhelming. Do you think you were better prepared for it because you knew how you had planned from a financial perspective and you were like, you know what? Actually, because especially when you go into these sorts of decisions, whether it's the wedding or it's size sports car, which that episode is still up on our YouTube page, whatever the decision is, it's an emotional decision. It's an emotional decision to get married. It's an emotional, sometimes maybe not, maybe sometimes, you don't have a say in it. But the point is because there's emotion tied to the money, the decision process or the decision making process looks a bit different. Do you think because you were financially prepared, it was easier to make some of those decisions?
I typically go back to, there's this, I forget this guy, he's from the US, huge podcast about finance. He always said money is communication. To communicate with someone, you have to have a tone, and that tone is dictated by your emotion. You're talking to someone and you're happy to talk to them, your tone is different, and I think of money like that. And I think stuck to me in terms of how I was dealing with my investment and my plan as well, that I allowed and knew that investments on their own are human connection because there's money involved into this human communication into it. And I tied it to my plans. So even in those plans as well, those 5-year plan, was not even I didn't know 5 years ago I was going to get married now. But as I moved on with life and I evolved, I grew as a person, I knew I need to shift this plan, move it to this other way, move it to another way. Another day, I am in a better financial position. Yes, the emotions were there. Honestly, it had me to sell something I built for so long. You know when you open your investment portfolio and you see your growth that it took so long to build and now you must click the sell button. It's so painful. You feel this amount of work, hours, the money I put in, researching all these companies. Now when I go back to buy, I won't be buying the same way I bought when I entered in, right?
Sai, do you think you'll feel the same? Because you've got many more years of experience than both myself and Ivan. Do you think the day you decide to, I know we've had the Reg 28 conversation, but the day you decide to retire from markets and finance in general, and you're like, I'm switching off everything. I'm shutting down the computer. I'm clicking close on everything. Do you think you'll feel nostalgia? Or do you think you'll feel, you know what, I've done it?
I think I'll be dead. I don't, I mean, I aspire to one day stop staring at markets.
It's a dream of yours.
I don't know. I mean, I've done it. I've been doing it now for 30 years.
Yeah.
In varying degrees. Life. Yeah. I would love to be able to step away. And look, I do. When it's holidays, like I'm taking a month off over Christmas, man, the market can do what it likes. Like, I will figure it out when I'm back.
Mm.
But yo, to step away, to say, that's it, I'm done.
That's it.
I don't know.
That's
it. Sure.
Maybe one day. Gentlemen, before we run out of time, we have been talking about a lot of these things. And I want to kind of get sort of a takeaway from the conversation for someone that's out there wondering, okay, all great, great information, but where does it all come together? Where does it all start? So, small exercise. R1,000. Si, what do you do with R1,000? Ivan, what do you do with R1,000? It doesn't have to be in the markets. It doesn't have to be in any form of traditional investment. I mean, you can go and buy a cookie cutter machine and cut cookies if you really want to. But how do you take R1,000 as someone out there who's just got this R1,000 and is saying, I understand that I can't take all of the risk in the world, but I want to be able to at least turn R1,000 into something more.
I would buy a diverse global ETF.
Okay.
I know.
Why?
Because it's diverse, it's global, it's an ETF. Tick, tick, tick. Because markets go up over time. In the short term, noise happens, but in the long term, stuff happens. R1,000 will grow. It is fundamentally boring, but because it's diverse, it's going to include all the other different markets. It's not just going to be America. It'll be, I mean, there's one out there with 9,000 shares in. Like,
okay.
Like you bought everything.
You bought every share.
You've got everything. And I would just buy that and somehow leave it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ivan?
I think touching a point I was about to take to talk to touch on, but this year I'm so busy I don't have time to actually research companies, invest into them. One thing I'm doing right now is 3 ETF I'm hugely into. The JSE Top 40 ETF, obviously covered in South Africa. I have the Nasdaq 100, I have it covered, and I have one in the RISI. I have that one covered. That's one thing I'm just doing. I'm putting money in those ones. I relax. Obviously, there's some I buy once and those cryptos, but I'm not, I'm into cryptocurrency. I'm huge into cryptocurrency nowadays. I put money into that, but because I don't have the time to actually build up my portfolio the way I will want to, but I still want to continue investing. So I don't like imposter syndrome. I don't like, now speaking about investments, I don't have any because I sold everything. I still put in those ETF. And I think as well, I'm into, as I said, is crypto. And also I'm looking to small companies in the GSE. The ones that actually had financial issues before. I'm looking into those ones. Yo, what do you call this one? This is other one I forgot now. It's a cement company.
Not PPC.
PPC.
Oh, PPC.
Obsessed about that company.
Yeah.
Don't ask me why I'm obsessed. So those are the type of things I'm looking into. But even all that R1,000, I would save R150 for a souvenir. A white wine. Just white wine.
$150
go to buy a red wine for yourself, please. Because people, this is another thing as well. I have noticed, well, in my audience, a large number of them get into investment so hard. They are like, when like I see the conversation I have with them, whether it's in my newsletter or in my WhatsApp channel, the comment section of my videos, they are in too deep. And I always tell them, investment is not supposed to be that. It's not supposed to be your personality. It's not supposed to take away from you enjoying, experiencing life in general. Because sometimes we do the extreme. We are not invested at all. When we start investing, we do too much.
Yeah.
We never balance it. So someone said to them, like, we never even like, yo, just go. You just got paid. Your money came in. Buy yourself something. Appreciate yourself.
And the man is right.
Just do it.
It's as if Ivan knows. There we go. It's as if he knows the tagline of the show. Investing isn't hard. Just try it, right? We're going to leave the conversation on that note, or we're going to have to leave our deep dive on that note. Perhaps what we might get into in our next dive is the power of constantly adding to investments. We've spoken about one-off investments. Perhaps we'll get into how your investment starts to look differently as you contribute more on a monthly basis, and whether or not you should be diversifying your monthly contributions to build out a more diversified portfolio. But folks, that's the deep dive. That's all we've got time for on this week's deep dive. Once again, thank you to Ivan for joining us in the studio. Thanks for sharing your journey. We never have enough time for these conversations, but stick around. Perhaps we'll have another deep dive with Ivan some other time. For now, we're going to get into Make It Sense. And we're wrapping things up with Make It Make Sense. We try to make sense of things that are happening out there, mostly numbers related, but sometimes, like today, a bit off the chain. Si, I've curated some really special ones for you today. Because, well, I tried to make sense of them and, yeah, that's all I've got. That's all I've got, right? So, we have four to get through today. We're going to start with the simplest one because, well, it's easy to get out of the way. The post office.
Yeah.
Happens to be wanting to come out of business rescue and all sorts of things. I saw an article recently that said that the post office at some point took a decent amount of time to deliver a package. What would you gauge would be the length of time it took to deliver this particular
package? Well, this is a very hard question because I have two packages en route from the UK, which are about a year and a half to 2 years, respectively. Another have arrived.
Okay.
So minimum That's 2 years. So okay, 2 years is like a minimum, but I'm going to push it a bit and I'm going to say, I mean, assuming it does arrive and I've given up, I would say 4 to 5 years.
4 to 5 years. Okay. So there was a package.
And to be clear, I don't understand how it's possible to take 4 to 5 years, but
in 2023, that was a little while ago.
Yeah.
There was a lady who had a package arrive at her door that she had ordered from the United States. And she had forgotten, much like you, about the package.
Yeah, I had forgotten about these. I'm now reminded again, yes.
And her parcel delivery was 13 years late.
13
years. At that point, I've probably lived in a different city.
Well, yes, I've never lived in one place for 13 years, so that is a true statement. Secondly, message in a bottle's quicker.
Homing a pigeon. Send it via pigeon.
13.
Make it make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Okay, let's get on to the next one. The Road Accident Fund. So the Road Accident Fund, yes, exactly that. A couple of years ago had some issues where they reclassified some contingent liabilities on their balance sheet and provisional liabilities that hadn't yet occurred. And it basically allowed them to wipe out 300 billion rands worth of debt off of their balance sheet overnight and say that, well, we're not going to account for this anymore. And it brought their debt down to about 34 billion, right? They came out recently to say, oh no, we're just going to add the 300 back onto the balance sheet now because we now need to account for it. And for me, I'm just like, first of all, how soon do you need a bailout that you're now inflating your debts by? Also, they are likely liable for these debts because it's provisions that are made in line with things like ongoing cases and all of that where they haven't yet determined how much is going to be paid out, right? But the Road Accident Fund, for context, for those that are wondering out there, makes about 50 billion rand a year. And somehow this place has no money, can't pay out things, is having to use different bank accounts. They're currently under investigation by the Standing Committee of Public Accounts. I actually spoke to the SCOPA chair, Songhez Ozibi, about this, and they have as many questions as we do.
Well,
they're also trying to make sense of it.
I mean, no one can make sense, and if he can't, I mean, he's a smart young man.
I don't know what's going on, hey?
So where did they, would they just like put it in a cupboard for a couple of years?
No, well, if you just erase it off a balance sheet, it's just not there, apparently.
That's not how balance sheets work.
That's not how balance sheet works. That's not how audits work either, especially given RAF is audited by the Auditor General of South Africa. But anyway, that's that. You'd think that that would be the most bizarre one, right?
Okay, I'm ready.
Let's get into, actually, I'm going to switch things around. Let's get into the Trump one. So President Trump has announced that he will be giving a tariff dividend to Americans, and it will be at least $2,000 per American citizen. And because they've made that much off of tariffs and Americans deserve that. And on top of that, they'll be paying down the $37 trillion worth of debt. The things that this man comes up with.
But the numbers don't add up.
Well, I suppose they do if you're not using a calculator, Si. If you haven't, if you're just thinking, your mistake is using an actual calculator. And we did the exercise. We used a calculator.
Yeah, so a calculator says about $700 billion for every American.
On 300 but odd million.
Because he says he's not going to give it to rich Americans. He's probably not going to give it to black Americans.
Okay.
He's not going to give it to... to baby Americans, etc. Okay. So let's say it's $350 billion. Uh-huh. A quick question to ChatGPT tells me that they're going to earn about maybe $150 to $200 billion a year on these tariffs.
Okay. So he's running a deficit of $150
billion.
Notwithstanding,
he's pulled back on some of them, China and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the math not mathing. So he's giving away 2x what he's receiving.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the $37 trillion? I thought that's
the debt that they're going to pay down.
Doge was supposed to solve that problem.
Mm.
Remember they were going to give everyone $5,000 from the Doge plan?
Yeah. He's just giving money to Americans and taxing everybody
just
else.
Just like say stuff. Just release the Epstein files. Come on. I mean, what else are they doing here? Because this is
this is why we're trying to make sense of it, isn't it? This is what we're trying to make sense of.
My head hurts.
Yeah. No, this doesn't.
Okay.
This isn't. Okay, right.
Doesn't make sense.
You thought that was going to be the end of your headaches. Mm-hmm. I'm about to add to it, mm-hmm. right? So there's, let's paint the scenario for those that want to get a bit of context. So I feel like context is important in some of these things, right? Ooh, sorry. Let me do that. Our audio guys are not going to be able to watch this, so have to kind of paint a proper picture mm-hmm. about what's happening. Right, the PIC, the Public Investment Corporation, effectively the closest thing we have to a sovereign wealth fund, but really not that. They're invested, or they were, well, they are still invested, I suppose, in Lanseria, the airport, right? Mm-hmm. And part of that is there is a BEE partner involved in that deal and that sort of thing, right? So this is what I would like you to make sense of, Si. This BEE partner had a 25% shareholding in Lanseria Holdings. And to finance this 25% shareholding, I believe a part of it was a loan obtained from the PIC, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm.
Right.
Okay.
So the shareholder has now sold out of their holdings of the 25%. They somehow managed to sell out of these holdings. The loan that they had is settled. They came out of it with a 400 million rand profit. And this is all off the back of an incorrect valuation. So 25% held in the entity mm-hmm. was, I believe the loan at the time was 600 million.
Mm-hmm.
So 600 million owed to the PIC. Yes, the shareholder owed the 600 million to the PIC. After disposing of this 25%, their shareholder loan, or the loan to the PIC, is settled. And they are to the green by some 400 million, which means they made a billion on this transaction off of an inflated valuation of the company that, or their shareholding. This inflated valuation now, mind you, the PIC remains a shareholder in their own mm-hmm. right in that as well. So they're upset. Apparently the PIC is livid. I'm trying to make sense of how you get paid $400 million to get out of debt.
Can we go back to the letter? That made more sense. You got paid 400 million because you were in debt, and like that makes no sense.
And to be clear, you got paid 400 million by the person you are in debt to. So, Si,
makes less sense if that was possible.
Simple number, Si. You borrow me 6 rand.
Yeah.
And then for me to give you back the 6 rand and repay you the 6 rand, you pay me 10 rand.
Nah. Yeah. Nah. Nah. Lamborghini sales are going up this week, aren't they?
I love it. Lamborghini sales are going through the roof this week. Yes. So the PIC says they're investigating the transaction. They don't believe that the overinflated valuations make sense. And yeah, they're going to try and figure it out.
Okay. If the PIC is scratching their head, then I don't feel so silly for not understanding.
There we go.
I do not understand that.
The CEO of the PIC is trying to figure mm-hmm. out what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
The PIC is obviously going through a lot of things at the moment. The likes of the suspension of their chief investment officer, the settlement that they have with AO Technologies, and the delisting around that, and all sorts of things there. They're trying to get their heads around that. But this, for me, was a moment where I really needed to try and make sense of these numbers. Folks, if you have thoughts out there on how we make sense of these developments, let us know, because clearly we're not smart enough to make sense of them, or perhaps we're missing something. So, hey, that's what we're going to try and make sense of. On that note, that is the show for the week, folks. If you have missed the conversations, don't worry. Don't worry. That's why we put them up. You can go catch up on them. Before we go, we're going to leave you with an unfiltered opinion of the week. This week's unfiltered opinion is, when is it too soon to start putting up Christmas decor?
Not before my birthday. Like, I was seeing stuff in October. My birthday is like the second to last day of October, and I was seeing Christmas stuff in the shops around here, and it is not cool. I haven't had, you must know how much it so traumatized me as like a 6-year-old. Like, I was worried we were going to be skipping my birthday. We were going straight to Christmas. Don't get me wrong, love Christmas, but I was worried about my birthday, because you see, my mother's birthday was the day before Christmas, and she often wouldn't get a birthday because of it, and I was so scared of that happening to me. It traumatized me. So here I am, a very old man, 50 years later, and it still traumatizes me. It should be, what's the 12 days of Christmas? You can start it on 30 November. 25 November. There we go. 25 November. Not before.
Folks, if you can't already tell, Si is exceptionally traumatized by Christmas decorations being out before Halloween. I happen to know a couple of people that celebrate Halloween, and then the very next day, Christmas is on. If you, I don't know if you've seen this, Si. There's a trend that's been going on for years online, and it is the 1st of November. She defrosts, so to speak. I'm referring to Mariah Carey.
Oh,
and she says it's time, because Her song, All I Want for Christmas, is historically probably the biggest Christmas song ever. And it now makes her the most amount of money. I'm going to get the figures for you.
She tried to do some copyright around the phrase or trademark or something. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, she lost.
Well, she's the same person that at some point was rumored to have insured. Was it Mariah?
No.
No, that was Beyonce who insured her legs. Do you know?
If I had legs like that, I would insure them too.
Do you know how much Mariah Carey makes from this song alone every holiday season in royalties?
$5 million.
$2.5 to $3 million. This song debuted in 1994. The song is older than some people that are able to vote now in South Africa.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Since 1994, the song has earned over $100 million globally.
It's not even a very good song.
It's the Christmas song. It's the official Christmas song of the world.
It's better than Bo Me M. I'll give you that. Please don't play Bo Me M.
But there we go. Is it too early for Christmas decorations? When is it too early for Christmas decorations? And should we be defrosting Mariah Carey a little later into November than when we are? That's the show for today. Investing isn't hard, folks. Just try it.
The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.